Hi, I'm Laura.
And I'm Joe.
And this is Crime Divers.
Hello everybody, welcome to today's episode.
Hello everyone, hope everyone's well. And here we are for another episode, Joe.
Yep, here we are. Did you just bang yourself?
Where are we?
she's swinging about on my chair and she's just banged her leg off my desk. So, no sympathy, it's your own fault. Okay. Anyway.
Where in the world are we?
Australia.
And the title?
The Worst Nana.
The Worst Nana?
Okay. My inspiration came from because my niece Laura's daughter watches The Worst Witch.
That's exactly what I just thought of, The Worst Witch.
The Worst Witch. So...
The Worst Nana.
This is The Worst Nana, although The Worst Witch is nothing compared to The Worst Nana. Okay. The Worst Witch is actually just a really nice little girl.
I'm intrigued now, so shall we just dive in?
Yep, okay. So, Catherine Mary Knight was born on the 24th of October 1955 in Tenterfield, New South Wales, Australia. And she was actually, just straight off the bat I'm going to tell you, that she was the first Australian woman to be sentenced to life imprisonment without parole.
Oh, right.
Yeah, she's bad.
Oh dear.
So I hope you're, you know, strapped down, ready for the ride. Because she's a bit of a crazy one.
A bit of a crazy one.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's go.
So Catherine's mum, Barbara, she had been married to a guy called Jack. They lived in a small town called Aberdeen. Fun fact, there's an Aberdeen in Scotland as well, but this one was in Australia. And they had four sons together. So... But Barbara had an affair with a friend and a co-worker of her husband called Ken Knight. Mm-hmm. So they got found out and it's caused a major scandal because they lived in like such a small town. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's like the 50s. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what the population was back then, but just to give you an idea, I found out that according to the 2016 census, that there were 1,894 people in Aberdeen. So that's how small it is.
Yeah,
so obviously somebody... In a well-known family, they're having an affair, and it's a big no-no.
Yeah, yeah.
So, after the affair had been discovered, Barbara and Ken had to move, because, you know, the scandal.
Yes.
I keep wanting to say, like, Barbie and Ken, though. But it's like, obviously her name was Barbara, and I don't think she was anything special. I don't think she was a Barbie.
No.
So, Barbara and Ken, they moved to Tenterfield. So, remember, she'd had four sons with her first husband.
Yeah.
So the two older sons stayed with their dad, mm-hmm. and the two younger ones were sent to Sydney to be raised by an aunt.
Oh.
So I'm not sure why she didn't take any of the kids.
The dad couldn't have all four?
Yeah, I've absolutely no idea.
It seems the same shape as split them up.
Yeah, I know, that's what I mean. And I think Sydney was like maybe a couple hours away as well, so it wasn't as if they were like right
close
to each other. Mm-hmm. I don't know the reason for that. So Barbara had another four children with Ken, so including twin girls, the youngest of which was Catherine, and her sister was called Joy, so they were the twins, Catherine and Joy. So when Catherine was four, her mum's first husband, Jack, he died. So the two sons that had been living with him now came to live with her and Ken. But still, these two other sons, the younger ones, were still living with the aunt, so it's... I don't know. I don't understand why she never took any kids to start with. And when the husband died, she took the two older ones.
I know.
I don't know. So that would have been six kids and two adults living in this house.
Right.
And this house wasn't a pleasant house to live in, to say the least. Mm-hmm. So Ken Knight, the father, he was a violent alcoholic. He would beat his wife, Barbara, and he raped her multiple times a day, like up to 10 times a day he would rape her. And he would do it in front of the kids. So they would see their mother being beaten and raped every day.
Lovely.
So now, even though Barbara was being beaten and raped, she was no saint either. Mm-hmm. Barbara and Ken would take it in turns to beat the children. Mm-hmm. And they would use things like dog leads and electrical cords.
Ooh.
So, yeah, I mean,
not nice.
Neither of them were
no
saints there.
No.
And like Barbara, she would often tell her daughters intimate details about her sex life.
Oh my God, what?
I don't know. And she would tell them how much she hated sex and how much she hated men.
That's just
like, yeah, don't talk to your daughters about stuff like
definitely
that.
Not. That's disgusting.
And later on in life, like when Catherine was older, she actually went to her mum for advice because she had a partner who wanted her to take part in like a sex act that she wasn't comfortable with. She didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. So she went to her mum for advice and her mum just told her to put up with it and stop complaining. So, you know.
Great role model she was, eh?
Yeah. And Catherine claimed that she was sexually assaulted by her half-brothers until the age of 11. I mean, she claimed that she did. I don't know if there was actual... I mean, I think other members of the family have said it as well, but, you know, I don't think anything sort of came of it. I don't, you know,
yeah.
They weren't punished for it or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So, in 1969, the family moved back to Aberdeen and Catherine attended Muswellbrook High School and she was a bully and so was her twin, Joy. They would fight, but they would actually fight with each other, but they would stand up for each other. Like, so if anybody started on one twin, then the other twin would jump in and be like, no, that's my sister.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, I suppose that's a lot of families, but they did fight with each other as well.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine once attacked a boy at school with a weapon, and another time she was injured by a teacher who she had attacked, and the teacher had acted in self-defence.
Oh, wow.
Imagine that, like a teacher having to act in self-defence against a child.
Yeah, that's awful.
Yeah. So needless to say, she was quite a violent child.
Does sound that way.
So she left school at 15 without having learnt to read or write. And she worked at a clothing factory. But apparently back then and where they lived, like, kids leaving school without learning to read or write wasn't such a... uncommon thing, and like in the where they lived there was it was really common for the abattoirs and stuff, so it was kind of like, well, that's what you're kind of working towards, so the reading and writing bit wasn't a major big deal. So a year later she got her dream job, her words, dream job at an abattoir, or as some people call it, a slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
So she started off as a general labourer, which involved cleaning up blood and flesh from the floor. But she was soon promoted to a cutter. So when she first died there, she would watch the pigs being killed.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, cause she'd be up the front, like, watching. And, like, her co-workers all thought it was because she wanted to learn. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. It was because she enjoyed it. She liked seeing these animals being killed.
Mm-hmm.
When she was promoted, like, there's obviously a way that that they slit the pigs' throats. Yes. You know, obviously the quickest, the easiest, yeah. Whatever. And I'm sure she would have been taught that, wouldn't she? You would get trained for it and everything. You'd get taught that.
Mm-hmm.
But she would like to actually like nick an artery and like just watch the pig bleed out.
Oh.
That's horrendous, and I should have put a trigger warning.
I was just going to say, you just told me on my last episode to do that and you didn't do it either.
I know, I actually forgot about that bit. She was then promoted to boning and she was given a set of butcher's knives. And she actually, later on, she actually hung these knives above her bed so that they would always be handy if she needed them.
Oh, right, okay. I don't think she'd have been allowed to take them home.
Well, she must have been.
I bet you wouldn't get to do that now.
No. But I was just thinking, I wouldn't feel safe lying with knives above my head. What if they fell on top of you when you're sleeping?
Yeah.
What if there's like an earthquake and...
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's not sensible. It's not really
that sensible. I don't sleep with anything above my head.
No, me neither.
In 1973, when Catherine was 18, she met David Kellett. He was an alcoholic and he was forever getting into like fist fights, you know, in the pub and stuff like that. And as Catherine was used to this kind of violence, she would actually join in and fight along beside him. So like if he got into a fight with somebody in the pub, like, she would be like, whoa, that's my man. And like start like punching them. And like, but she was strong. Like she was I think she was like a bigger woman. I don't think, not as in... overweight, I think, like a big sort of, you know, kind
big
of build. Big built and strong, and you know, maybe, I don't know, she's quite tall and things.
Right.
So yes, she would just fight alongside him. And she decided that she wanted to get married and basically just forced him into it, you know, told him that we're getting married and that's it.
Yeah.
And she just dominated him, you know, she'd done that right from the start. And on the day of the wedding, she arrived on her motorbike and he was already drunk by the time she got there.
That sounds like a great wedding, that.
And her mum, sorry, Barbara actually pulled David to the side before the wedding to have a word with him, and he was quoted as saying, right, so this is what he said, the old girl said to me to watch out, you better watch this one or she'll fucking kill you. This is her talking about her daughter. Stir her up the wrong way or do the wrong thing and you're fucked. Don't ever think of playing up on her, she'll fucking kill you. And that was her mother talking. She told me she's got something loose, she's got a screw loose somewhere. End quote. So,
okay.
He still went ahead and married her though, even after that warning from her mum.
Fair enough.
My mum said anything about that about me, I'd be like, excuse me.
I know, I'm sorry.
Thanks, mum. And it didn't take long for her to try and kill him. On their wedding night, so that day.
Jesus Christ.
Sorry. Oh, that came out of nowhere there. On their wedding night, Catherine tried to strangle him after he fell asleep. And I'm sure you're wondering, why would she do that? Like, what was the reason that after he fell asleep, he's doing nothing wrong, why would she want to kill him? Well, it was because they had only had sex 3 times before he fell asleep.
Right.
Her parents, because, you know, her mum shared all the intimate details, her parents had done it 5 times on their wedding night.
Oh, so, because they didn't do it 5 times.
So 3 times wasn't enough.
Christ's
sake.
You'd be like, maybe
you go
once.
That's it. I'm like, look, bro. Yeah. Once is fine for me. Like,
exactly. That's fine.
And fall asleep all you like. See ya. I'll do the same. But yeah. Luckily, he woke up so she didn't manage to kill him. So the marriage was violent, though. Like, well, obviously. I mean, it was violent the first night.
I was just going to say, yeah.
Like, for instance, one day when she was heavily pregnant, David had arrived home late from a darts match because he'd actually made the finals of the darts match, so he obviously wasn't expecting him.
Yeah.
Came home a bit later.
Right.
So that's a good thing, isn't it? He got into the finals.
Oh, you think?
But she burnt all of his clothes and then whacked him over the head with a frying pan.
See, those would be the days when you couldn't, like, just send any text or anything and say, no, I've got through the finals, I'm just going to be a bit late.
But it just, does it not, like, you don't whack somebody over the head with a frying pan. Like, to me...
Do you know that Justin got smacked over there by an iron with an ex-girlfriend?
Really?
Yeah.
No, that's awful.
I can't remember.
Actually, I think she does this to somebody later on in the story as well.
Yeah, because I remember him telling me, not that we discussed a lot of his ex-girlfriends, obviously, but it was a funny story anyway, and they must have had an argument, and she smacked him over the head with a frying pan.
Wow.
And then I think he'd obviously, like, land on the floor, and I think she did actually come back and check that it was all right. I was like, Jesus Christ.
That's domestic abuse.
I know, I was like, okay, that one didn't work out then.
I know. And, like, you know, it's not a cartoon. Mm-hmm. Like, it damages you to get hit over the head with a frying pan. It's mm-hmm. not like in the cartoons when they just get back up again.
Exactly.
So he managed to run to a neighbour's house before he collapsed, and they called him an ambulance, and it turned out that his skull was fractured.
Oh,
so, if that was just for him being late, I hate to see what else you did to him.
Exactly.
So police wanted to charge Catherine, but she talked David into dropping the charges. Mm. So in 1976, Catherine gave birth to her first child, Melissa Ann. But soon after, David had had enough. He was sick of Catherine's violent and possessive behaviour, and he left her for another woman, and he moved to Queensland. So the following day after he left, Catherine was seen walking down the street with the baby in her pram, but she was shaking the pram violently and, like, slamming into walls and fences and everything like that, like, swinging this baby from side to side.
Oh, this was a bit of crazy nana.
Well, she's not a nana yet.
Oh, all right. I was thinking it was going to be her mum.
No.
Oh, right, okay.
She's not a nana yet. Sorry. You're jumping ahead of the story.
I thought it was going to be her mum that was the crazy one.
No. Yeah, so she was, like, being violent with this poor baby in the... in the pram. So she was admitted to St Elmo's Hospital, where she was diagnosed with postnatal depression, and she spent a few weeks recovering. But when she was released, she placed 2-month-old Melissa on the railway track when she knew that there was a train due.
Oh my god. That should have been taken off her there and then.
So she left the baby there. She then stole an axe. She went into town and started swinging the axe at whoever came near her, threatening to kill them. She was arrested before hurting anyone and was again admitted to St Elmo's Hospital, but she signed herself out the following day. As for baby Melissa...
I was going to say, please tell me you're going to tell me what happened.
Yeah, luckily, there was a homeless man known as Old Ted, and he was, like, sort of... I think he was just, like, raking about the place, you know, maybe looking for food and things like that, and he saw the baby, and he went and picked her up, and, like, literally minutes before the train came.
Shit.
Like, so if he hadn't been there...
Poor baby Melissa.
Oh, and Melissa was going back to Catherine.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Oh, here's your baby back.
Oh my god.
Mm-hmm.
That's awful.
So, A few days later, on the 3rd of August 1976, Catherine went to the house of one of her co-workers, Molly. So she told her that Melissa wasn't very well and needed to see a doctor. So she asked for a lift. So, of course, Molly's like, yeah, of course. Like, you know, your daughter's not very well. We need to get her to the doctor's. So they got in the car, and her mum and her younger brother went as well. I don't know why, but, you know, they all jumped in the car. Mm. But once they were in the car, Catherine slashed Molly's cheek with a knife and demanded that Molly drove her to Coffs Harbour, which is about 6 hours away. The reason she wanted to go there was because that's where David's mum, Jean, lived. And Catherine, so she obviously wanted to find out where David was, because she didn't know where David was. He'd left her.
Yeah.
But she later did say that she intended on killing Jean. Sorry. She intended on asking Jean why David left her. Mm-hmm. Like, as if he didn't... Seriously, do you not know why he left you?
Oh, well, yeah.
And then she was going to kill Jean and then kill herself. That was the plan.
Right.
But Molly drove to the nearest service station. So I'm assuming she must have just said, oh, we need to get... If we're going to drive 6 hours, yeah, we need to get some petrol. Yeah. So when they got to the service station, Catherine got out of the car and she dragged Molly's brother with her, holding the knife to his throat. Uh-huh. But the police were called, and when they arrived, they attacked Catherine with broomsticks.
Okay.
Do they not have other, like, do policemen not have, like, batons and things? And
that was, like...
Oh, I don't know.
But years ago, so...
They used broomsticks. Okay. And they disarmed her. So she was admitted to Morissette Psychiatric Hospital and was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder.
Really?
So while she was in hospital, Melissa, the baby, went to stay with Barbara and Ken, Catherine's mum and dad. Catherine told the nurses at the hospital that when they were at the service station, she had intended to kill the mechanic because he was the person who had repaired David's car, which had allowed him to leave, because obviously he drove his car.
Uh-huh.
And if his car hadn't been fixed, then he wouldn't have been able to go. So it was the mechanic's fault.
Right, got you.
Mm-hmm. So when the police informed David of what had happened, because obviously that's her husband, so it would have been like next to kin kind of thing. Mm. So they informed him of what had happened. He left his girlfriend in Queensland, and him and his mother, Jean, came back to Aberdeen to support Catherine, and they got back together.
Right.
On the 9th of August 1976, Catherine was released into the care of David and his mum, Jean. So as soon as they left the hospital, they went straight to Catherine's parents' house, to Barbara and Ken's, because they went to pick up Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as they pulled up outside, Barbara came storming out the house and was shouting at David, like, blaming him for Catherine's breakdown. You know, it's all...
Oh, his fault.
It was all his fault, yeah. Uh-huh.
But yeah, she was the one who told him that her daughter was going to kill you, etc. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, obviously, they were still sitting in the car. They hadn't even got out of the car. So Barbara reached into the car and was, like, strangling David, like, got a hold around his neck, and she's shouting at him, strangling him with her hands round his neck. Sorry, I'm going to get out properly. And then, so Catherine, she jumped out of the car, stormed round and just punched her mum square in the face, knocked her to the ground and told her never to touch David again.
Okay. Right.
So, yeah.
This is great.
She's some women.
Yeah, totally.
So on the 6th of March 1983, Catherine and David had another daughter called Natasha. But in 1984, Catherine left David. I don't know why. I don't know what happened there, but she took the kids with her. So she first moved into her parents' house, and then she moved into a rented house in nearby Muswell Brook. So she went back to work at the abattoir, but a year later she injured her back and couldn't go back to work, so she started getting, like, a disability pension. And the government gave her a housing commission residence in Aberdeen. So I think that's something along the lines of what we would call, like, a council house, I think, and like assisted sort of, you know, or I don't know, like affordable living whatever. So in 1986, Catherine met a guy called David Saunders, and he moved in with her and the kids. But he did actually keep his own place, his own apartment. So as you can imagine, relationship wasn't great. And Catherine would get jealous and suspicious of what David was doing. Like, you kept this apartment, so when you're at this apartment, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
So they would have arguments and she would throw him out. So just as well he did keep his own place,
because
he would have somewhere to go to. But then a little while later, she would, like, go begging for him to come back, you know. So, a little bit animal cruelty just coming up, trigger warning.
Mm-hmm.
In May 1987, she wanted to give him an example of what would happen if he ever had an affair. So this is just an example, right? If you ever cheat on me, this is the kind of thing that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So she went outside, grabbed his two-month-old dingo puppy and mm-hmm. slit its throat.
Oh, why?
And then...
I'd be like, that is exactly why I'm going
to
leave you.
Well, he didn't get a chance to say anything because she knocked him unconscious with a frying pan. Honestly, like...
Yeah.
That poor puppy, just mm-hmm. no. Mm-hmm. And he hadn't even done anything wrong.
No.
Even if he had, that's still a no-no, no, definitely excuse, not. No. But the fact is, that was just... This is an example of what I'm going to do. Or what I would do if you ever cheated
seriously,
on me.
Seriously.
So...
Right in the head.
I just dropped the laptop there. A year later, in 1988, they had a daughter together called Sarah. So David decided to put a deposit down on a house, so that, you know, family home, you know, we've got a kid now.
Yeah.
So the following year, Catherine, she got compensation for when she hurt her back.
Right.
So she actually paid off the house. But she decorated it with, like, animal skins, because she was, like, she liked, you know, obviously she'd worked in the abattoir, she was used to, like... That skin,
and
she would skin animals and stuff like that. So this was real animal skins. Mm-hmm. Skulls, horns, rusty animal traps, leather jackets, old boots, machetes, rakes, and pitchforks all over. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how it was decorated. Like, there was no space was left uncovered, not even the ceiling. It was everywhere. But the only thing I was thinking was, well, for one, yuck. How is that safe for your kids?
Well, no, because they could
if there's
up.
No space uncovered. Mm-hmm. Well, no. No.
Get a nice wallpaper.
Exactly. Off you go to B&Q and just get some nice wallpaper.
Not B&Q. Well, my B&Q might have existed.
Well, I don't know if they have it in Australia, but you know.
Well, but the equivalent of somewhere where you can buy wallpaper.
So one day after an argument, Catherine hit David in the face with an iron, and then she stabbed him. See, I told you. And then she stabbed him in the stomach with a pair of scissors. So he left and he moved back to his own house. So he still must have kept his own place, even mm-hmm. though they'd got the house. He later went back to Catherine's to pick up some of his stuff, and she had cut up all of his clothes. So he was like, do you know what? Like, I can't do this anymore. So he actually said to work, he was like, right, I need to take time off. Like, I need to, like, extended leave. Mm-hmm. And he actually went into hiding.
Wow.
That's how scared he was. Like, mm-hmm. he went into hiding.
Oh, dear.
So, and Catherine tried to find him, but, like, nobody would tell him, mm-hmm. tell her where he was. And a few months later, I mean, he was obviously missing his daughter.
Yeah.
So he went back to visit her and found out that Catherine had gone to the police and told them that she was scared of him.
Oh, for God's
sake. As she had gotten a restraining order against him. Like, oh, this woman.
Yeah.
So, but she wasn't just abusive to the men in her life. One day when Melissa was about 12, she interrupted Catherine talking to her friend. So she must have had a friend around. They were sitting in the living room. You know, 12-year-old has just walked in and interrupted them talking. And Catherine got up and punched her in the face.
Oh.
You know, normal people would be like,
shut up.
Yeah, I've got your room. Look, I've got company, you know. What do you want?
Like, yeah, you wouldn't go punch them.
No, that's horrendous. And like David Kelly, you know, our first husband, he would send his daughters, because remember Melissa and Natasha are his daughters, like he would send presents for birthdays and Christmases, but Catherine would just throw them away before the kids got to see them. So she would tell them that their dad hadn't sent anything.
That's awful.
So, yeah. So after the relationship with David Saunders ended, because obviously he went into hiding, he was like, no, I have nothing to do with this. She got together with a guy called John Chillingworth. He was a former co-worker of hers. They had a baby boy together. I mean, stop having kids.
Well, no.
Probably
these men actually want to be with.
Yeah, I mean, apparently she was one of these women that was very good at sex and getting men to do what she wanted to do, which is really surprising when you see photos of her, you know, and you're like, well, she's, you know. I'm not commenting on people's looks. We'll just not go there. So they had a baby boy together called Eric, and they were together for 3 years before she left him for a man called John Price in 1995. So John Price, he was born on the 4th of April 1955, and he had three children. His children liked Catherine, and she moved in with them. He had three children. His two older children, I'm not sure how old they were, but his two older children lived with him, and he had a 2-year-old daughter, but she lived She was a daughter. The daughter lived with his ex-wife. So John drank a lot, but he was also a hard worker. He worked in the mines, but he would always be first at work. No matter how much he had drank the night before, you know, he'd always be the first one at work. Mm. You know, he was a hard worker. They went out drinking a lot with friends, and they were all loud and boisterous. And when they were throwing a party, like, everyone knew about it. Mm. But they were having a good time. They were just drinking, having fun, living their best life. But obviously, cracks soon began to appear, and Catherine would be violent, and they would fight a lot. One time John tried to leave her. So to get revenge, mm-hmm. This one isn't as bad as the puppy. Don't worry.
Yep.
She got the video camera out and she videoed a first aid kit that she thought that John had stolen from his work.
Right.
And she took the video to the mine's management and John uh-huh. got sacked for it.
What?
For stealing. Because he was stealing. It was, you know, obviously company policy. You're not allowed to steal. So he got sacked for it. I mean, like, the boss was like, I feel really bad because I really like him. But theft is theft. Like, you know, we have to. But it did actually turn out that he hadn't actually stolen the first aid kit. It was out of date and it had been in the bin. So he'd actually just took it out of the bin. Mm. But he'd worked there for 17 years. And that's what she made him lose his job.
Oh, horrible, horrible woman. Yeah. Spiteful.
So just, and that was just because, like, after an argument, just for revenge. Jeez. So he kicked her out that day because no wonder.
Yeah, fair enough.
But he took her back 3 months later, but he wouldn't let her move back in with him. But he lost the respect of a lot of his friends because of it. And, like, he even had to change pubs because his friends just couldn't believe that he was back with Catherine and they just didn't want to be around, like, her, really, or their relationship. You know, they knew what she was like. They knew she was violent and they were just like, nah.
Yeah.
We didn't want nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. And the arguments were just getting worse and he started to confide in his bosses. So he must have got another job. And so he was confiding in his bosses that he was starting to get really worried about what was going to happen. And every time he hit him, like every time she hit him or shouted at him, like he would ring his friend and tell him what happened so that if something did happen to him, then his friend could be a witness as to what had been going on.
Yeah.
So one day in February 2000, they had a row. And Catherine had threatened John with a knife and he, like, ran out of the house and over to his friends to get away from her. And the following day, the police arrived at John's house with an AVO, which is an apprehended violence order, which is to protect victims of domestic abuse, that they, by law, had to take out on Catherine's behalf because she had phoned the police and accused John of being violent towards her. So it's just basically like a restraining order.
Yeah.
Order.
That's awful. But I think back in those, well, not back in those days, but
it's 2000.
Yeah, but I mean, I suppose like domestic abuse still was more, people believed the women that they were the victims and the men weren't sort of victims of domestic violence.
Yeah, it's only been recently that it really has started to change and people are realising more that it's not just women that are victims.
Exactly.
But despite this, John stayed with Catherine, but he came to realise that she was capable of anything. The following Monday, John went to work and his boss could tell this was a man who was clearly shaken up. He hadn't seen him like this before and he knew that something was wrong. So John sat down and told him what Catherine had done and she said, I reckon she's going to do me in. So the next day, which was Tuesday the 29th of February 2000, John stopped at the magistrate's court on his way to work and he took out a restraining order to keep Catherine away from him and his children. He told the magistrate that at 2 o'clock that morning, he'd woke up and Catherine was standing at the foot of the bed with her hands behind her back. He jumped out of bed and was like terrified that she had a knife and he was sure that this is it, she's going to kill me. Yeah. But as he kind of jumped up and got closer, he realised that he could see in the mirror that her hands were actually empty.
Right.
But I think that was just enough for him, just the thought that, that this is it, she's going to kill me. Mm. That's it, had enough, want her out.
Yeah.
But she wouldn't leave, so that's why he was like, right, I'm going to court, I'm going to get the restraining order. But John must have known that something was going to happen to him, though, because later that day, he went over to his friend's house with a couple of beers and he said to his friend, if you see my van out front in the morning when you get up to go to work, call the police. Because if my van's there, that means I haven't gone to work. Mm-hmm. She's done me in.
Yeah.
So his friend told him, like, not to go home. Like, but John was scared that she might kill his children. Like, that's how, you know, that he knew that she was capable of anything.
Yeah.
And he was like, nah, I need to. So he went home about 11 p.m, but actually none of the kids were at home. She had sent his kids to stay with his mum,
mm-hmm.
or their mum, actually, I think. Their mum, I think it was, actually, sorry. And her younger kids were, so Natasha was older, but Melissa and Natasha were older by now. So she sent her younger kids to go and stay with Natasha. So earlier that day, Catherine had gone to her sister's house to pick up the video camera that she'd left there at some point. She then went to Natasha's house and she videoed herself playing with her grandchild. See, mm-hmm. she's a grandmother.
Yep.
So she was playing with her grandmother. Her grandmother. She wasn't playing with her grandmother. She was playing with her grandchild.
Uh-huh.
And in the footage, she had looked at the camera and said, I love all my children. I hope to see you all again. She also videoed her other kids and she was like pushing them to say stuff that was later interpreted as a will. Mm. So it was like, as if she was going to die, and it wasn't like maybe like what they were going to get when she dies, or what they wanted when she died, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So she then took Natasha out for a meal, and she asked, so the kids must have sort of, I don't know if Natasha's partner was there or something, so the kids must have stayed there. She took Natasha out for a meal, and she asked if her two younger kids could stay there for the night. And Natasha, she must have caught on that something was going on, because she actually said, I hope you're not going to kill Pricey and then yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So she obviously knew. So Catherine, and Catherine had bought like some like sexy black lingerie earlier that day, but apparently I think she bought it for a second hand shop. So.
Oh, la la. Ugh, yuck.
I have no issue with second hand clothes, but like
not underwear.
No.
Not.
No. Anyway, so they had, so that she obviously wanted to seduce someone they were gonna and like have sex with him that night. So that's what happened. So the next morning, the 1st of March 2000. John's van was still outside the house.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, police were called.
Yeah.
And two officers called Graham and Scott went to the house. They knocked on the door, but they got no answer. And they looked through the letterbox and saw what looked like a bunched up curtain hanging down in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
So they kept knocking, but nobody was answering. So thought, right, you know, because I think they must have sort of had some background and sort of knew. So they're like, right, we're going
to
force entry. So they went around to the back and they managed to break in the back door. And straight away, they saw what they thought was this curtain hanging down. So they'd have to like sort of brush, because I think it was like in a doorway, like sort of hanging down in a doorway.
Uh-huh.
So they had to like brush past it. But when Scott's arm touched it, it felt like really, really cold. And he looked down at his arm and his arm was covered in blood.
Ooh.
The officers realised that it wasn't a curtain and it was actually a human pelt. So basically it was the skin of a human.
Oh my God.
Like, the whole skin.
No.
It had been, like, totally skin from...
Oh.
In one piece. It wasn't just, like, bits of skin. It was, like, one piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the ground there was a torso without a head and without any genitalia. Are you okay?
That's disgusting.
I know, but are you okay?
Yeah. Carry on. Carry up and get them.
There was blood everywhere, on the door and at the kitchen area, and there was a pot on the cooker, and on the kitchen worktop there were plates that had meals prepared. So they continued to search the house, and they heard a noise coming from one of the bedrooms, and it sounded like a snore, like somebody snoring. So they ran in and they found 49-year-old Catherine lying on the bed. They tried to wake her and she wasn't responding. So the guy ran outside, they called an ambulance, and it turned out she'd taken an overdose of pills. So what Natasha thought, she was going to kill Pricey and and then kill herself. That was right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if she was intending on killing herself or just sort of making it look like, So police started to get statements from witnesses, mainly from members of both Catherine's and John's families. And as the investigation got underway, Catherine was kept under close supervision in hospital because she was still unconscious. So while they were waiting for her to sort of come round on that and be well enough for interviews, forensic investigators set out to examine the house so they could determine exactly what happened. So Peter Muscio, a forensic investigator, entered the house through the laundry at the back, and he said there was like a sweet odour. It was like a really nice smell,
mm-hmm.
Like as a food, like as if your mum was cooking a stew.
Yeah.
And he walked inside, and one of the first things that he saw was John's skin, the human pelt,
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. hanging from the door on a meat hook. Mm-hmm. Further into the kitchen, you could see blood staining on certain items going through to the lounge, and then there was John's body in the hallway. There was blood that John had coughed up on the wall, because you could tell by the way it was splattered. He'd obviously coughed up blood, and it was splattered all over the wall. Mm-hmm. And there was blood on the light switch from John trying to... Because obviously, this because it had happened at night, so he tried to switch the light on. So from examining the scene, Peter Musio determined that John had been attacked whilst lying in bed. So it's thought that they've had sex and he's fell asleep and then she's attacked him. Mm-hmm. So, and then, you know, he's obviously wakened up and he's tried to run. Mm-hmm. So because the blood stains were getting heavier on the walls, but also lower. So he was obviously kind of losing blood. Yeah. And he did manage to get to the front door. And I think... And there was blood spatter on the front, on the door, and on the handle as well. So I think he actually had managed to sort of get to the door handle, but it collapsed before he could get outside. Aww. And John had been stabbed 37 times in total, obviously by Catherine. You know, yeah. there's no question who done it.
Definitely not.
And where John's body was, it was clear that his whole body, had been there. Because remember, it was no head and no genitalia. Mm-hmm. So that's where he collapsed and died. Mm-hmm. And then Catherine skinned him and placed the skin on the carpet beside, because obviously with the blood you can tell, and then she took his head off. One thing I'll tell you now though is I never found out where his genitalia was.
Oh right.
So I don't know what happened to that.
I thought you were going to tell me it was like cooking or something because of the sweet smell.
But so then you could see that, like, you should walk through to the kitchen carrying John's head because of the blood dripping. Obviously you can tell there's a blood trail, yeah, of where she'd went. And the blood led all the way to the cooker, to the pot on the cooker. John's head was in the pot with some vegetables. So they then examined the meals that had been set out. There were vegetables, gravy and meat from John's bum. Mm-hmm. So she'd sliced off bits like from John's bum, uh-huh, and she'd cooked it in the oven like steaks.
Oh, okay, you're making me feel sick now.
Sorry. So on the plate, I'm just going to carry on because... So on the plate, you know, they had like, it just looked like steak with like vegetables, right, and gravy, okay, and everything.
Yeah.
And there were five of these steaks, so there was like two on each plate, because there was two plates, two, mm, on each plate. And one was, they reckon, was probably for the dog, because it was like on the ground outside, as if it had just been thrown outside for the dog. Next to each plate were the names of who the meals were for. So John's two daughters who lived with them, that's who the meals were for. So Catherine had cooked their dad and was serving him up as a meal to his kids.
That's disgusting.
That's what she was doing.
That's actually disgusting.
And she also left a note on top of a photo of John. It was covered in blood and small pieces of flesh. And it read, this is weird, I don't understand this note at all. And the spelling is shit. So it said this, stop biting your nails, I can hear that. Well, if I can hear that, it might be picked up on the audio. Right, so this note said, time got you back, Jonathan, for raping, my daughter, which daughter, I think it was daughter, you too, Beck, which is John's daughter, for Ross, dash, for little John, which is John's son. Now play with little John's dick, John Price. So basically, she's saying that he raped her daughter. And it says, you too, Beck, John's daughter. So I don't know if she's accusing him of raping his own daughter and stuff as well. Anyway,
makes no sense.
These accusations were false. She was just setting herself up with a motive. I mean, personally, what I think is, I'm not sure if she meant to kill herself, but I think maybe she was trying to kill herself, but if that didn't work, then she was going to have it. If she was going to get... Yeah. charged with murder, this was her motive because he was a rapist.
Right, okay.
I think that's probably,
yeah,
what it was.
Maybe.
So 5 days later, Catherine was interviewed, but she said she couldn't remember anything. Although she did take responsibility for killing John, she just couldn't remember it. She said that she must have done it because of the severe ongoing domestic violence that she had incurred in her during her life and more recently with John Price. Mm-hmm. So she blamed John for her killing him and claimed that she was the victim of domestic abuse.
Oh, right.
And she's basically snapped and killed him. That's basically what she's saying.
But then skinned him and chopped him, mm-hmm, up. And
exactly. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, like, it does happen, you know, like somebody who is a victim of domestic abuse, you know, it does happen. They snap and they kill somebody, but that's all that happens. They just, yeah, kill them and then they're like, fuck.
Yeah.
They don't go on to then exactly. do all this, do they?
So that's bullshit.
So she claimed that his violence towards her had been so bad over the time they'd been together that she just snapped and couldn't take it anymore. But of course, police interviewed Catherine's past partners and it became apparent mm-hmm. that Catherine was the perpetrator of domestic abuse and not the victim in her relationship.
Feeling rather relieved at that moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, that, well, that's something you'd be thinking, that could have been me.
Yeah, it could have been anyone.
They found the black negligee and it had sperm on it. So that's how the police knew that they'd had sex. Mm-hmm. She'd killed him and then she stole his wallet and went to the cash machine and withdrew $1,000.
Right, okay.
And she left the car at her house, which I think she'd inherited. Her mum had died at some point, so I think she'd inherited this. That's how she had that house as well.
Right, okay.
Because remember, he hadn't let her move back in with him. Yeah. So she'd left her car there. And that money was never found, so I don't know what that was all about. I don't know why she went and took £1,000 out, and I don't know what happened with that money. So Catherine initially offered to plead guilty to manslaughter, but that was rejected, and she was charged with murder, to which she entered a plea of not guilty. So when the trial started, there were 60 jury prospects, and the judge gave them the option of being excused mm-hmm. due to the nature of the photographic evidence,
yeah.
and 5 of them excused themselves, which I think I probably would as well, because yeah. even hearing about it makes me feel sick, never mind seeing pictures.
Me too.
Several more dropped out the following day, so the judge adjourned to the following day. The next morning, Catherine changed her plea to guilty, so the jury was dismissed. The judge ordered a psychiatric assessment to make sure that Catherine understood the consequences mm-hmm. of a guilty plea and that she was fit to make such a plea. Her legal team had been planning on claiming amnesia and disassociation, but she was considered sane after the assessment, mm-hmm. so that was out of the window.
Yeah, totally.
So two psychiatrists concluded that she did suffer from borderline personality disorder, but obviously that doesn't make you kill somebody, you know. No. There's millions of people that have got that, yeah. you know, so that doesn't make you murder somebody.
Exactly.
So at the sentencing hearing, Catherine's lawyers asked if she could be excused to avoid hearing some of the facts.
Oh wow.
And they got a hard no. It's like, no, you committed these.
Uh-huh.
Why should of course you have to hear it.
Oh, exactly. You're the one that done it.
Exactly. So, and when the skinning and decapitation was described, Catherine became hysterical and had to be sedated. How? You did it.
You managed to do it at the time.
Yeah. So, Catherine Knight was sentenced to life imprisonment. The judge refused to fix a non-parole period and he ordered that her papers be marked never to be released.
Good. Because she's vile.
And there you go.
Thank you for that.
So, she is definitely the worst nana.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. So, thank you to everybody for listening.
Mm-hmm.
And if you would like to join us on Patreon to get some bonus episodes, that's patreon.com/crimedivers. If you'd like to follow us or get in contact with us, our information is in the show notes.
And if you don't already, please don't forget to subscribe, rate and review.
Thanks for listening.
See you next week.
Bye.